because that's where we're going next. We're going back several centuries before the brilliant Leonardo da Vinci was sketching inventions that were way ahead of their time, back to ancient Greece and Rome, when animals were ritually sacrificed to appease the gods. In fact, such forms of sacrifice have appeared historically in almost all cultures. Dr. Suzanne O'Neill from the Department of Classics in Trinity College joins me now. Would someone living in Roman times have been surprised at the modern outrage against blood sacrifice?
Absolutely not. They would have just thought this was normal. Almost everybody in the ancient world carried out animal sacrifice. It was the central act of Greek and Roman religion. Without blood sacrifice, there couldn't be true piety. And it's very, very interesting. You know, there were careful rituals to be observed when an animal was sacrificed. Because the gods liked animals' splendid gifts, the animal chosen had to be undamaged and domesticated. So it was something you really treasured. And they would have whole processions of people, music playing. The animal would be led up to the altar. There was usually a young female at the head of the procession. She would carry a basket with the sacrificial knife hidden in the basket, so the victim, the animal, could not see the knife, if you like. Usually young male adolescents would lead the animal victim to the altar. And there would be a chief sacrificer at the altar. And this could be a public altar or a private altar, because most houses would have an altar to the gods. These sacrifices always happened outside the temples because there would be burnt offerings and what have you, and the smoke could go up to the gods. The gods delighted in the smell of burning animal flesh.
And the, I mean, we have apparently a description, a full description of an animal sacrifice in Homer's Odyssey, but the animal would be stunned first.
If it was a large animal, it would be hit with an axe. And yes, we do in Homer's Odyssey. There's a very wonderful description of an animal that's sacrificed by Nestor for Athena. And once the animal, you know, there's this procession bringing the animal to the altar, the chief sacrificer would be there. The animal would be sprinkled with holy water, lustral water. So we see this in Christian baptisms as well. And this would have two effects, you know, this symbolic purification, like I say, in Christian baptisms. So the animal would be purified. But equally, what's so interesting from an anthropological point of view is the animal had to nod. It had to acquiesce. It had to want to be sacrificed.
Yeah, how did you achieve that illusion? Because I'm sure no animal would want to be sacrificed. So what happened? What did they do to get the animal to nod?
Well, they sprinkled water on a small animal and it would shake its head, you know, to get the water off its hair. But if it was a large animal, an ox, you know, and this was the greatest gifts you could give. There's a whole hierarchy of animals from an ox, you know, a cow. It's a very expensive gift to the gods, right down, you know, through sheep, pigs, and a cockerel will be one of the cheaper sort of offerings to the gods. So a drink of water was actually given to a big animal, so that would seem to be nod. And then once this had happened, the animal's head would be lifted to heaven. The chief sacrificer would produce the knife from the basket and slit the animal's throat. And to add to the drama, women present would scream at the moment the animal's throat was slit.
And this was not a spontaneous reaction, this was part of the ritual.
This was part of the ritual, of course, yes. And then the animal's blood would be collected and it would be put on the altar. Then the animal would be slaughtered then.
And what would the average Greek or Roman think would happen if the gods were not honoured by this sort of sacrifice?
Well, the reason why people... It was not a very altruistic, you know, the way we sort of in our Christian and great monotheistic faiths have this idea of, you know, piety and, you know, it's good to think about good things for other people and what have you. For the ancient Greeks and Romans, this was a contract with the gods. So you were doing this to directly influence the gods, hoping for some advantageous reaction from the gods. They would help you in life or what have you. And if the gods were not appeased... at public festivals and private. You know, this could result in bad crops, it could result in earthquakes, all sorts of famine.
The four horsemen of the apocalypse could
absolutely
be visited.
Absolutely, yes.
And of course
yes.
not, I mean, Greek and Roman gods, they weren't all good guys, were they?
Oh no, Greek and Roman gods, like I say, it's not like our great Christian monotheists. They weren't there as examples. The gods behaved in supernatural ways. They were vengeful, they raped people, they murdered people. Of course, they weren't there as an example. They could do this because they were gods.
Right, and therefore you had to appease them. So not yes. that the animal cared very much, but what happened to the animal after it was sacrificed?
Well, the animal is then, it's skinned and it's butchered. And very interestingly, the bones, the thigh bones and the fat of the animal are burnt on the altar to the gods. And the lean meat is cut up and distributed
okay.
to the worshippers.
That seems to me to be tempting fate. Basically, you offer the offal and the bones to the gods and you take the good bits for the guests.
Well, the Greeks were very pragmatic and the Romans. And we have to thank a very famous mythological character called Prometheus for this. Prometheus, the man, well, he was a god himself, actually, he was a titan, who's a helper of mankind and a trickster. And back in the day, this is a great story in Greek mythology, Prometheus tricks Zeus. He does the first sacrifice. He puts the bones and the fat in one pile, the lean meat in another pile and covers them up and says to Zeus, which do you want? So Zeus goes for the larger pile and it's the fat and the bones. And for this, man is denied fire. Zeus, because Prometheus, the great Prometheus, you know, this is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein inspiration and what have you. Because of this, Zeus withdraws the gift of fire
but
from
Prometheus
mankind.
Goes and steals it anyway.
He steals it anyway.
And
you need
the consequences.
Fire for sacrifice, yes.
Yeah, because his liver basically is taken out by
yes,
a bird.
Yes, he's chained
and,
for eternity.
And grows again over in a horrible, yes. horrible story. Now, were there any, you know, were there cults, were there nations, were there groups, were there religions who rejected animal sacrifice?
There were, yes. But they were seen as very outlandish. We have the Epicureans. Epicurus, a very interesting ancient philosopher. He believed the purpose of life is to attain a happy and tranquil existence, free from fear and pain. And you could achieve this by being good to yourself and having lots of friends and being nice to everybody else.
And animals.
And animals, yes. He believed that the gods could not be appeased. He believed the gods neither cared or disliked humans on either way. So it was pointless, basically, animal sacrifice.
Sounds pretty sensible.
He's a great man, Epicurus. I do love him very much. He was an atomist. He believed in atoms and what have you.
And the followers of Pythagoras, the famous, the man with the famous mathematical theory, they also didn't believe in
animal sacrifice. Well, Pythagoras, he's writing in the 6th century, and Pythagoras, known to us for, you know, pi r squared, every school child will know that. But he was known in ancient times for his rituals. He was a master of ritual and religious ritual. He was an expert on it. He had his own cult that followed him. He equally was very interested and fully believed in metempsychosis, which basically is reincarnation. And there's a fabulous contemporary story about Pythagoras. It's a small fragment that is found from Xenophanes. And Xenophanes says that Pythagoras is walking along one day. He sees someone beating a puppy. He stops the man from beating this small little puppy and says, "Stop. That's my best friend who died last week," basically. He believed in the reincarnation of the human soul in animals. So this is very interesting. So the Pythagoreans were very worried about animal sacrifice because you could be sacrificing a friend or a relative.
Now, what about human sacrifice? Was there any, is there any evidence for that during this
period? It's interesting because we've got other people who don't like sacrifice, and one of them is the Christians. And of course, you have the sacrifice of Jesus Christ at the centre of Christianity. But yes, in ancient Greece, there is evidence of human sacrifice. Certainly in the great epics, we have it in Homer's Odyssey and Iliad. Perhaps the most famous example in the texts of human sacrifice is the great tragedy where we have Iphigenia, who is the daughter of Agamemnon, And she is sacrificed by her own father, Agamemnon, because there is no wind to take the Greek ships to Troy. So, if you like, so that the goddess Artemis will bring a fair wind so the ships could sail to Troy, Agamemnon actually sacrifices his own daughter.
But there's also archaeological evidence, isn't there?
There is some, but this isn't from the great classical age of Greece. This is from a period in the Bronze Age, about 1700 BC. And there's a cave, it's called the Cave of the Winds, and it's a place just in the mountains above Heraklion. You fly into Crete, the airport there, Heraklion. And what we have here, a colleague of mine, Dr. Christine Morris, who is an absolute expert on the Aegean Bronze Age, she says this is almost definitely a human sacrifice. And what we have at Animus Filia is a case of there's a skeleton of a young man on an altar, his feet are bound, there's a sacrificial knife on his chest. Close to him, there's the skeletons of what looks like a priest and an attendant. And what's happened is, at the point of this sacrifice, and like I say, scholarly experts do think it is a human sacrifice, there was an earthquake. So it was frozen in time. Now, this Cave of the Winds was excavated in the 1970s, and it caused much consternation because people don't like to think, anyone to do with ancient Greeks, this is where democracy come from, what have you, that they were involved in animal sacrifice. But then it's backed up, I suppose, by texts, Homer, and also, the great tragedies, this and Iphigenia.
Okay, well, that particular archaeological evidence would suggest that the gods didn't like human sacrifice because they sent an earthquake at just the right moment or the wrong moment, depending on your point of view. Suzanne, thanks for joining us this evening. We'll put more information about this topic on our website. After the break, we'll be talking about, among other things, the now defunct practice of churching women after childbirth.